Mud Podcast presents.
It's time for Politically Correct with Josh and Charlie. You've got it tuned to the mud.
Have we got topics for you, listeners?
Yeah. You know, it was funny. I make a habit to start my Sunday. I don't know. Maybe it's because I had a grandfather who used to do this too. You know, you want to watch your Talking Heads network programming on Sunday morning. I think my mom was a fan too of Meet the Press. But, you know, we've gone through various hosts now. It's not quite what it used to be, like various things aren't. But I was fascinated watching Meet the Press this weekend, listening to Donald Trump being interviewed. And it was amusing to me that halfway through his interview, which, of course, was much longer online if you wanted to hear the whole thing, NBC, is it, I suppose? NBC broke in and said, and breaking news, and Joe Biden was giving an address from the White House. I thought, oh my gosh, the president just preempted the president-to-be in the middle of the Sunday news program.
To deliver bromides about how his terrorist-in-chief had just changed his suit so that he could be a proper-appearing president of the country that he's looking forward to tyrannizing in al-Assad's place.
Right.
So worth interrupting for.
Yeah, if anybody missed that, this was a special news break because Joe Biden wanted to make sure that everybody knew that it was a great thing that Syria's government has fled. The Assad regime is over, and the dictator has fled to Russia, and everything is going to be fine now and hopeful. But man, what a messed up part of the world, I'll tell you. There's so many factions in Syria. It's hard to keep score with who's moving what, doing where. And, you know, I was recalling an in-depth story that I edited down for the Green Fuse, and I looked at it 7 years ago. I had a hard time finding it, actually, but I remembered some of the details and was able to find it. 7 years ago, this was the civil war in Syria was going on full steam, and the remarkable thing that week had been that both French and U.S. airstrikes were happening in northern Syria. And so I don't know, you don't hear much about the French there now, but of course, everybody's got an interest. Poke in the pie is kind of a thing. Currently, we're down.
And Syria was originally theirs when the Ottoman Empire was carved up after World War I.
So
they have a heritage there.
They've got the heritage vote, yes. So, you know, currently we've got, that we know about, Iran, Russia, Turkey, the U.S., Israel.
And the Gulf states.
And the Gulf states. And then there's the various ragtag militias and factions and the Kurds, of course, which the Turks don't like.
And many ancient populations, the Alawites, who are a branch of the Shiites, who are a branch of Muslim rule, and they all agree to disagree about many important things. The 10% of the population is Christian of various sects that you've never heard of, because none of them were even in contact with the Orthodox Church, let alone the Latins, except when the Latins invaded, and that didn't last very long. No, it's an extremely diverse population. And this terrorist in chief who swept up, he's changed the name of his organization, but he's still, formally, we still have a $10 million reward for his head from the U.S. government while we're congratulating him on his statesmanlike evolution. And these people are flat-out Wahhabi fundamentalist, head choppers.
Apparently, they say
they don't chop heads anymore, that was just a phase. You know how kids are. But we will see.
So this is the guy that they were supported by the Turks? Logistically?
By everybody who wanted to bring down Assad.
Right.
So the Turks, the Americans, the Saudis, you name them. Yeah. But he's a Wahhabi. That's the main thing. The fundamentalist strain that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has been so generous in funding all around the world. These are his terrorists.
So,
and of course, we agree with their terrorists because we like the Saudis. We believe despotism is a good thing as long as it works with us. So
now is
yeah,
he the guy,
we're in the same camp.
In the absence of any governing authority whatsoever except revolutionary bravado right now, I heard today, somebody has assured us, the United States, that they don't want to touch those chemical weapons stores. Don't worry about that. And hopefully Israel has begun to bomb, destroy chemical weapons stores that they perceive somewhere in Syria to get them
out
of
the way. Israel has been bombing all week, as have we, by the way.
Yeah.
We made 75 sorties. I don't know how many the Israelis have. Nobody counts them.
And I don't know who we're targeting exactly.
Who can tell?
Well, that was the thing that struck me from this old article, is there was actually a bewildering statement that the U.S. was supporting Arab militias, Arab-Turkish militias, Turkish-supported militias, and we were also supporting Arab I can't even remember how it was, so ridiculous. Basically, it sounded like we were funding both sides of a fight.
Yes. We're funding two sides who will get around to killing each other as soon as they've finished off the
Assad
regime.
U.S. allied Arab forces backed by Kurds have been fighting for more than a week with U.S. allied Arab forces backed by Turkey. So
you read that right.
Yeah. And that was years ago already.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Turkey has a longstanding distaste and aggressive behavior against Kurds and a potential Kurdistan. And Kurdistan would definitely encompass part of Syria. Northeastern Syria is nominally controlled by who's control of anything?
I don't know. Yeah, I want to hear how you explain this one.
You know, there are people with guns in the back of pickup trucks doing various things in that part of the world. So that's where we are.
But that's also that's Rojava, which is also the Arcadian blissful location of Murray Bookchin readers who have created a socialist paradise while shooting at everybody who wants to invade them. And in their midst, wherever there's an oil well, there's an American base stealing that oil and shipping it to Israel via Turkey, which formally, you know, doesn't really get along with Israel, but they're playing a double-edged game just like Assad does. So, and that's also the breadbasket of Syria. So it's important for the U.S. to occupy it to prevent Syria both to prevent Syria from ever recovering from the civil war by cutting off its two most necessary commodities, the oil that will pay for anything and the wheat that will feed anyone. And both of them have been stolen by American forces, although Rojavans are able to feed themselves. And as you say, they have to spend a lot of their energy defending their border against the Turks, who want to sweep down at any moment and kill them all.
Right.
Because eastern Turkey is also part of Kurdistan, and that's why the Turks, on one hand, don't acknowledge the existence of a Kurdish identity. They call them Mountain Turks. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, they want to exterminate them for thinking that they're different.
Yeah.
So, and that's just Turkey. Syria is more complicated.
Yeah, no, the whole thing is so complicated, and it seems confounded by the idea of all these maps that have been drawn without any regard to the actual people that lived in those areas, right?
Well,
historically,
and, the challenge is that in long-standing empires, you have different peoples living cheek by jowl with each other because they perform different economic roles. It's the same thing in Russia, same thing in Eastern German domains, where the Germans and the Jews live in the cities. And when the Turks take over, the Turks become the big landlords, but they don't want to dirty their hands with commerce, so they still need Jews and Germans. And in Syria, it's the same thing. There are all these little pockets of very different cultures that have all been there from time immemorial. And theoretically, the party that is in power right now in Damascus this week doesn't plan to slaughter them, but last week was merrily slaughtering them. For the past 10 years, they've been abusing and torturing them. But he assures everyone that all that's over and now they're all going to get along. And is there any reason to believe this is any more sincere than anything else coming out of Syria?
Yeah.
We'll see.
I don't know. You know, the notion of that sort of the reality of the people on the ground versus mapping. Addressing that previously about the last election, you know, and I just started reading this book, The 11 Nations of America, and it traces out, you know, the regions of America that could easily define different nations. And their history, you know, how it is that the philosophy of that region, of their settlement and development was distinct from the other regions. And we're at the beginning of what would be Balkanization in this country, you know, that so-called Balkanization, which that term itself implies, you know, the coming together of various ethnic and political and economic groups and calling it one thing when it really isn't, you know. It's sort of this construct of, well, we have to be a big thing, so let's seize that.
So
and
when
put
you
it
balkanize
together.
It, you do two things. One, you draw boundaries for individual populations, and two, much more important and much more difficult, you drive the wrong populations out of the areas that have been given to another.
Right, right.
Balkanization is about segregation.
Right.
And
manipulation in general.
Yeah. There are 3 million Syrians chafing at the borders of Turkey right now to come back into the country that they fled from under Assad, while there are at least that many minority Alawites and Armenian Christians, et cetera, who are champing at the bits to flee into Turkey to get away from what they assume will be, the genocides to come from the new winners.
Right.
That's Balkanization indeed.
Right. But we got a ceasefire in Lebanon, right?
Yeah. The Hezbollah stops shooting and Israel keeps shooting them. That's what we call a ceasefire because America negotiated it.
Well, it impacted me. I was on my holiday trip. I stopped at a favorite international market hoping to get my favorite brand of bulk halva. And they didn't have it. They didn't have the one that's made in Lebanon. Only the one that was made in Turkey. There you go. It hit me hard. But you got to do what you got to do. Oh, man.
I just ordered something online that came in. Oh, shoot. I've forgotten what it is now. Just some trivial electric gizmo that turns out to be made in Israel. Mm-hmm. And I had no way of, exercising my democratic right to get in trouble by not wanting to buy Israeli products right now. So.
Well, hopefully it doesn't explode unexpectedly at some point.
They can't hear all of us, can they?
I don't know, man.
Good point.
I started to read or watch Ronan Farrow's documentary. I think I fell asleep, but, you know, it's old hat. It's like Snowden reboot, Snowden Revelations. Redux, a big article. I think he wrote a book, actually. There's a documentary out that about the ubiquitousness of surveillance and how these private companies, without any oversight, are developing this technology that can scrape your data out of your phone and hear your calls and your texts and turn your camera on without you knowing and selling it to governments. Israel's a big player in this space. And it's a little frightening. So in the end, his advice was turn your phone off every day and turn it back on because then it has to kind of relearn stuff and it slows it down. But in the end, we're victims of it all. I mean, everything we're doing, you can't hide, which, of course, I've always thought, well, if that's the case, anybody who's worth their salt as a, revolutionary activist or terrorist or whatever – by now should well know that you don't do planning electronically, right? You don't call people on any device. You meet together at the coffee house, right? And like a secure environment. I mean, isn't that they should have learned that.
Now you aren't going to be able to keep track of all of the 25,000 cameras located in New York City alone that will see the two of you entering the coffee house separately at a convenient time. Boy, that's
yes.
So we learned about all this surveillance technology from the Israelis and from our hooded Avenger.
That's a nice segue. I feel it coming.
Man, all the pictures they were able to pluck of him as he wandered across Upper Manhattan.
Let's define who we're talking about here. This was the guy who shot down the CEO of what's the
United
company?
Health.
The United Health.
Something. Yeah. Which is not only the biggest of the great insurance companies, but is all building monopoly services at every level of the chain, from urgency centers to medical centers, hospitals. And it is the leading denier among all of the major companies. The single biggest one is Best at turning down medical needs.
Right.
And using people AI, probably know that,
using AI to do it too.
Yeah, right. Because yeah. AI is much more efficient at saying no than people.
So this is the guy that was killed. His name Brian Thompson. And a chilling note: the killer apparently etched on the spent casings. Well, they weren't spent on the casings of the bullets used to gun them down. Delay and deny. So.
And depose. He wrote him with Sharpies, which suggested to the suggestible that this killing had something to do with what that man did for a living.
Right.
Oh, and I was going to say, too, that the company recently signed an $875 million settlement with one category of victims. But they their turnover is $440 billion a year. Their profits are over $40 billion per year. So the fine for their business practices that make them so profitable is less than 1% of their profits, just in case you're wondering.
Right. Yeah, no. And not only that, the gunned down guy was sued by a firefighter's pension fund last spring for insider trading, alleging that he sold $15 million in company stock while failing to disclose the federal investigation into the company.
Yeah.
So there you go. A real
player.
And
his wife says that he was a loving family man. And boy, you know, it is really interesting that overwhelmingly, even on the New York Times comments, people say, you know, this guy had it coming. And there's a great deal outpouring of support for the hoodied Avenger who did it. And yet there are voices in the in the corporate media shaming the entire population for thinking that there's something to do differently in this industry, and thinking that it's just plain terrible that anyone should. Well, hell, I don't think there's any excuse for killing people, but I certainly understand why people have easy understanding for how it all happened.
And there was the other chilling bit there. I heard the news that the gunman had amongst his belongings, he has been apprehended, indications of a disdain for corporate America. Oh my God, is that like a clue of his culpability there? And of course, he also was a fan of Ted Kaczynski, it turns out. I can't remember how he had a book or, you know, commented about him or something on social media. But I remember when Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was apprehended, and they described the one-room cabin with no plumbing and walls covered with books. And I looked over at Paul Insmer, our former host here, and thought, that could be your house. So, I mean, I too will proclaim the same distaste for corporate, how was it put? I don't subscribe to corporate culture. How does that? I have to be careful because, you know, I don't want to be targeted by the people that are listening to the telephone. We're on the air. They can listen over the air like you at home, but also they could call in like you at 707-923-3911. So, yeah, it goes on. I mean,
no, it really is. It's a special moment.
Yeah.
These are dismal times generally. And around the world, you know, the whole neoliberal catacomb of horrors is collapsing in government after government, because what money does to people is indefensible. Mm-hmm. And yet the job of the political parties running every rich country is to defend the indefensible. And France, of course, is the most recent big country losing its government over these issues.
Right.
Germany, their government just fell apart. Our government thinks it's falling apart because Trump got reelected. And it's all related.
And how about
so
that,
is the murder.
How about that South Korea episode? I mean, that was wild. 6 hours of we're going to try this.
Yeah, and apparently the U.S. Was kind of encouraging that government be a little more efficient. They thought what he was doing was a great idea. And that poisons the whole enterprise all the more in the eyes of most people. So, yeah, he just couldn't swing it. And now they're bickering about how to remove him. It's interesting. They're having a much more public conversation about how to remove disgraced president than we can have with our debilitated president. And these horrible global events are happening during the interregnum of the American presidency because Joe Biden is checked out. He's not doing anything.
When I heard the South Korean martial law being declared and then quickly reversed by parliament, I wondered, I don't know, do you know, is there a mechanism in the United States to reverse an executive order of martial law?
I think you'd have to remove the president.
Yeah, it would take longer than 6 hours in this country, I think.
Yeah, now and the story in Korea was that the first order under martial law was for the army to shut down parliament,
mm-hmm.
The army refused to do it, and
yeah.
That's why the whole coup collapsed.
Right.
The parliament met in emergency session to figure out what to do about this crazy stuff, and the soldiers were supposed to go arrest them and shut down parliament.
Well,
they refused
to
do so. So the president lost all power.
Right, and that's because the martial law was declared specifically because the president's perception that the Democratic Party controlled parliament was in league with North Korean communists. I mean, that's like just off the top of his head, I guess. They might be, tend toward socialism. I don't know. But I mean, it's.
Well, you and I are well known Putinists.
Yeah,
it doesn't
that's
take
right.
much for,
speak for yourself.
That party to be. Doesn't take anything, come to think of it.
Yeah, right. Aligned with distaste for corporate policy.
Right. You're damning yourself right now.
Right. Well, there was that episode. What else has happened? Man, it's been a wild ride for sure.
Well, Israel is taking advantage of this interregnum. It has already expanded its boundaries into Gaza, where it's putting a military base where the city of Gaza used to stand. It has taken over the whole boundary zone of the Golan Heights, the portion of Syria that it stole after the 67 war, or was it 73? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And there was a buffer zone lined with Israeli and Syrian outposts on either side. And Israel just part of the story of what happened in Syria is that Assad wasn't able to pay his troops. He wasn't able to feed his troops. In return, his troops weren't willing to fight for him.
Right.
So they had just abandoned their outposts by the Israeli border, and Israel moved into them. So Israel is expanding right now. It's also moved into southern Lebanon. That's why it's shooting so many Lebanese right now. Now, it's still bombing people as well, of course. That's just part of their style. But according to the so-called ceasefire, they were going to pull back from southern Lebanon. And unlike Hezbollah, which under no circumstances at all was permitted to shoot at anybody, the Israelis were able to take what they always call defensive measures as needed. So their defensive measures are stealing more and more of southern Lebanon. And Hezbollah, of course, can no longer supply itself because their supply route from Iran that enabled them to fight effectively was through Syria.
Right.
And that has been shut down.
Yeah.
So Israel is up and on the go.
Yeah, I think it was 73, the Golan Heights. Remember my social studies teacher being outraged at it
mm-hmm.
back
okay,
then.
Good. Yeah.
So more to come on that.
Bad.
And the thing that's happened now, of course, is that Gaza is like off the radar. I mean, who's talking about Gaza right now?
Yeah.
Certainly, the people in Gaza are still talking about it. If they are still existent, we don't know what's happening. Does anybody know what's happening? I mean, I was away for a week and
Israel has explained that they're cutting the Gaza Strip in two. They are forcing all people from the northern half of Gaza, which is the more populous half.
Right.
They're forcing everybody out of that to live in tents in the south, which they then bomb,
right.
If you're wondering.
Well, they did that last year, didn't they?
Because, yeah, well, they're still doing it. There's still people there. There's still cause to bomb, isn't there? After all, there's still motion under the tents.
Right.
But the northern half that Israel has taken over has been militarized. They're putting in what they call temporary bases, I guess, while they, you know, flatten it enough to develop the beachfront condos. But as they do this, they have explained that if anyone is foolish enough to remain in the military zone after they've been forced into the tents that they're bombed in, they will be considered Hamas terrorists and killed. So presumably right now they're hunting people who didn't want to leave their homes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I just see here that Amnesty International has investigated and concluded that Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza.
Yep.
And I mean, that's our ethical, the moral police, so to speak. I mean, that Amnesty International has been on the forefront of releasing or working to release political prisoners and justice in the world, and you know that they're not just some ragtag group saying this. It's, you know, they investigated, for gosh sake, much like the UN did, right?
As if it's necessary.
Yeah.
And it's worth remembering that speaking of ragtag groups, if we were a ragtag couple of college kids, there are many campuses where we wouldn't have a right to use that word genocide without being accused of anti-Semitism and hustled off campus.
And then further.
So, you know, this plague is worldwide and it comes from us and it is hitting us too. The censorship inherent in unspeakable actions done by our government that you better not speak about or you're in trouble are haunting us right now.
And
you know, the education of our kids is suffering for it right now.
Flexing the specter that post-Trump president, well, when Trump assumes power, that what is the thing they're going to use to material support for adversaries, using things like if you had like a Palestinian club on campus or something, that would be considered giving material support, you know, if you did a little fund drive to feed Gazans or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the measure of your anti-Semitism is that if you say that Israel is committing genocide, it is alleged to make some Jewish students uncomfortable, and that's the gauge that shows it's unacceptable speech. It's strange that, you know, sensitive Jewish students have become another protected species like transsexuals were until recently in the eyes of some questionable laws.
Oh, yeah.
Bad, bad times.
And boy, do we
I think some of that will be swept aside with, you know, the advent of Trump. It'll be interesting struggles in the months ahead.
Yeah. Speaking of bad laws, troubling cabinet nominees keep racking it up. I've noticed that Pete Hegseth, the prospective Pentagon chief there, he's been accused of things that in the past would have just tanked that effort to become who he wants to become for such lesser things. I mean,
Trump has relocated the bar, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the bar is way low, doing the limbo there. you know, who was it? John Tower, was that the guy?
He was one of them.
Yeah, so he had a little dalliance. He was known as a womanizer and a drinker. And I mean, drinking is the thing. You don't want your head of the Defense Department to be a drunk, that's for sure. And of course, he pledged that he would stop drinking if he was appointed, which from the voice of somebody who seems to have a problem from time to time doesn't seem very encouraging. I mean, that's right. I'll stop hitting you, honey. I'll do better.
Yeah.
That's an old story there.
Well, some people interpret this as Trump's test of the fealty of his Republican colleagues. Trump wants to run things. He doesn't want any lip. He doesn't want any uppity so-called allies. And a way he can find out if any allies are disloyal is, okay, will you take this? Gates, who's, this sex criminal and, accused right. of underage shenanigans and whatnot. And that's actually a really sketchy story. But, of course, you never read the sketchy story. So we learned that, okay, there is a limit. He gave up on Gates. But that means all the more that he's going to push all the harder for Hegvedt right. and some of these other questionable creeps.
Did he give up on Gates, or did the Senate indicate that, no, you don't have a chance?
Well, it was both.
I mean, he had a meeting with the Senate, and they basically told him,
They made it clear that there's just no way he was going to get 50 Senate votes.
And he really,
because the Democrats wouldn't vote for him either.
And he shot himself in the foot by resigning from Congress before he was appointed.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Hey, we do have a caller. Let's see what they have to say.
Good.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening. Can you hear me?
Good evening.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, I wanted to add one thing about South Korea.
Okay.
So reunification is like super popular amongst the people in both DPRK and the Republic of Korea. And the South Korean military like is utterly controlled by United States military. They'll do nothing major in South Korea without DOD approval. So, like, just wanted to add that to the context of their short-lived coup thing. And also, I just wanted to say, I agree with everything you guys say geopolitics-wise. Also, like, these local issues, especially that guy Brian Thompson in New York City, whose, like, healthcare was denied coverage last week. I agree with your guys' perspective. And I wanted to say that if people out there listening tonight also agree with you guys hosting on KMUD right now, there's a couple, like, up-and-coming news shows similar to, like, same vein as Democracy Now! Or, like, alternative radio. But they're, like, taking up their mantle in the new digital age, right? They're not as old. If I could just, like, plug those. Is that cool?
Talking
like online podcasts?
Exactly. And so, you know, like it's more interactive type news. But it's you got Jackson Hinkle, who shows Legitimate Targets, Max Blumenthal of The Gray Zone, and Haas from The Infrared Show on Kick.com. Like, those three are going to be taking the internet by storm, I feel like. Everything that's going on. But yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate that. Bye. Thank you.
And I mean, I can note here that KMUD is making an effort to institute talk show programming as podcasts to be listed on all your podcast venues. This show may, in fact, because now there's an intern, KMUD intern, who is willing to do the grunt work that I skated on to package a program like this for a podcast. So that I'm taking notes now to get the timing of callers and so on. So yeah, you're right.
Nice.
You're right in there.
Keep it up.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, and that reminds me, I just heard Sue Maloney the other night, I guess is getting a Thursday evening time slot. I twice a month or something. And for similar perspective on stuff, she's a good one to listen to too. People will be familiar with her from Thank Jaw It's Friday, but now we'll be thanking Jaw It's Thursday Night.
Jaw's not particular what day it is. Okay, yeah, the number here is 707-923-3911. I wonder sometimes if we get a little esoteric talking about Middle East politics in terms of local stories. The earthquake. We made the BBC.
Everyone's so proud of that.
Well, it's unique in the fact that, you know, International News Organization gets footage from the grocery store in Redway. I mean, it's who does that?
Oh, boy. Yeah, Redway really – well, the Eel Valley towns really got walloped. And yeah. That's yeah, it's, what a ride. What a ride.
Yeah, it's a good reminder to here's a safety tip. Make sure your water heaters are anchored down. Things you don't want things to fall over and yank their gas lines out and chimneys falling out. I mean, these are the small things that add up to bigger problems. So somebody pointed out if only they had little shelf guards at the edges of the shelves at the grocery store, things would have stayed on the shelf, you know.
I wonder if that's true in this case. Boy, there was some pretty heavy shaking.
Yeah, it all depends on what you're built on, of course. You know,
yeah.
If you're on a solid slab on bedrock, that's one thing. But yeah.
Well, I've always felt relatively immune because we're on top of the ridge on a belt of basalt, you know, from the ocean bottom that previous ages of seismic activity thrust a couple thousand feet in the air. And until now, I've actually watched a wave of motion move through the wall of my house. Mm. I saw the ripple move through my wall. That's a pretty creepy thing to see, but it's really cool.
Yeah, no, I saw a wild thing. A neighbor had just poured a slab for a shop, and the shop was built, but the slab, you know, still curing. It was fresh. And a bunch of us were standing outside when an earthquake hit, and looking in, the slab rolled. You know, it didn't crack at all. It was still fluid enough to be intact, but it was like it was fluid. Yeah, it just kind of rolled through there and everything shook and we were raised.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I'm used to. So I was kind of flummoxed when this time it was just shaking, it's shaking, and then it seemed to be dying down a little, and then a much bigger shaking, and it went on. You know, in the 20-odd years I've been up here, I've never felt that before. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as immune as I thought.
Yeah, well, I thought, was this the tale of the big one in San Francisco is gone? You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Right.
And my cats were gone, too. Boy, you know, they stared at me bug-eyed and bolted through the cat door. They said, "Are you crazy?" They're out of there. But I wanted to – I thought I should go outside, but it was so interesting seeing my house shake. I just couldn't bring myself to.
Right. Well, somebody sent me a joke. Be aware of your body. Be aware of your perceptions. Keep in mind not every physical sensation is a symptom of terminal illness. That was – it's sort of a Zen thing. you know, the various good books say love your neighbor as yourself, but the Buddha says that there is no self, so maybe we're off the hook. That's I'm vamping now because I'm trying to get some good news in. I mean, do you have any good news?
I haven't thought of good news in the past little bit. Okay. No, I can't do it. Some of what's happening in Washington now I think is kind of fun. You know, I've been dishing on the Democrats so routinely, it's tedious even to me. And the fact that now there are Republican investigations of the Democratic investigations that consisted of covering up what they were investigating. You know, there's whole new processes and procedures in place. And we may learn some fun information about things like why we spent so much money doing paying for the research in Wuhan that went so bad, and when it was illegal to conduct that kind of research in the United States, and the idea of making it illegal was so that the U.S. wouldn't do it, and what we did instead was hired half a dozen foreign countries to do it for us, and then just lying about what the research consisted of in the official applications, which then Fauci lied about. And as long as the Democrats were in control, it was just one angry Fauci, you know, telling lies to one angry Republican responding indignantly. It's going to be different now. That'll be fun.
It's yeah.
I mean, I think there are other things like that.
That I think that's one of. The notion that kind of democracy's on the ropes. The French government's dissolved. The South Korean tried to do martial law. The Georgians, the Romanians, the various. Things like this that are kind of throwing this command and control structure into question, and how a response in this country has been to embrace the most unlikely people embracing the mechanisms of government. You know, the FBI relying on the FBI to do a good thing, or that, you know, that investigations from the intelligence community indicate this, so we ought to believe them now, you know.
There's been such a new idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's been such a history of, like, questioning all the functions of government, and now we kind of cling to them as, you know, the touchstone of what normal reality should be, you know, that we are reclaiming the structure of while all the time, of course, clinging to those big famous buzzwords of freedom, justice, liberty, all the things that make us what we think we are in this country. I came across some interesting numbers, the difference between the outgoing administration and the incoming administration, that the combined wealth of Biden's cabinet nominees and members is $120 million. The combined wealth of Trump's cabinet nominees is $10.7 billion, and that does not include the face cards of Trump, Musk, and Ramaswamy, which, you know, have their own mega billions going. As that said, hooray for billionaire populism. It just continues to confuse me how it is that people, the little people, are identifying with these billionaires as their heroes.
Not sure people are identifying with Elon Musk or any of these others in particular. I think they're voting against, not voting for. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of them I know are. And they'll keep voting against whoever has annoyed them most recently. That's all they can do unless we had an actual third party that actually represented somebody besides billionaires. But this being America, that's almost impossible.
Well, the theory here is that you support billionaires because one day you could be one, because that the American dream would say.
That's the old.
You don't want to diss the wealthy because you want to be wealthy. You know.
Yeah.
Although the bootstrap theory has been sort of debunked, the idea.
Well, I just don't know what percent of rural Americans who have been screwed for at least 60 years think that they're going to become billionaires next week, but they're still voting for Trump.
Yeah,
numbers.
Those are the people that buy lottery tickets, you know. So.
Okay. Yeah, if they think they're all going to win, I guess what you're saying makes sense. Otherwise, I don't think it does.
Well, who doesn't buy a lottery ticket think you're not going to win? I mean, the idea of buying a lottery ticket is you're going to win.
Funny, you know, I've got an old friend who likes to go buy a lottery ticket every week, and he's happily retired. He's adequately moneyed. He likes buying a lottery ticket so he can fantasize about what he would do with $180 million and who he would give it to.
Right.
That's his recreation. His wife thought he was a stupid idiot for many decades, but now she understands that he does this rather than thinking about other girls, so it's fine.
Yeah, I voted against the California lottery when it came up. probably for the reasons that have come true. You know, they claimed that it was to support the schools. And what it really meant was they took some money out of the schools because it was going to be paid for by the lottery. So it was a net, you know, not a net gain. But then walking down the street with my partner, there was a dollar on the ground in San Francisco right when the lottery was happening. And picked up the dollar and pocketed it and glanced over. And it was a store that sold lottery tickets. And we didn't buy one. That could have been it.
Well, it's your own fault.
Yeah.
You could have been a billionaire.
I know.
Then you would have voted Republican.
Right.
No, you know, you can't act rationally in this system because there is no voice for people who need reason. There's just – that's – reason isn't one of the options. Service isn't what you get. So, you know, you decide to vote on other bases. It's all you can do.
Yeah. And we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Something that I think is an interesting story that is somewhat reported now is the breadth and depth of voter abandonment of the Democrats and Harris specifically. There was only one demographic group where she held her own. Maybe it was Asian women or something. The Democrats are just losing their hold on all the categories of their traditional support. Even people who the Democrats could just swear up and down they had in the bag because they have no choice, like, you know, urban blacks. They're drifting away. And there's an interesting New York Times article about Philadelphia inner city Harris campaign was so badly managed that there was a rump group of volunteers who snuck off secretly on their own to put up their own office so that they could actually go out and do something effective. They had all of the paid organizers locked in their offices, forbidden to go out onto the streets and organize, told instead to spend their lives, literally their 8 hours a day on the telephone trying to push volunteers into going out and going door to door. And they had no materials, no information or anything else. So Democratic believers who wanted a volunteer to help Harris were so horrified by the perspective of the people on top of the campaign that they created their own campaign, and they were able to carry on because they went out to suburban Democratic offices where, you know, the mythical moderate suburban women were being courted, and got materials and chairs from them to bring back into the city to try to do something that Harris should have been paying for. And the point of this is that the Democrats really don't even have a sense of mission anymore. They only have a sense of entitlement, and so they deserve to lose. Most of them haven't analyzed why they deserve to lose, and until they earn more losing for long enough that they decide to learn something, we're going to continue to have a very confused country.
Yeah, I don't really think there's an opening for new party development. I mean, has there been a better time for it, I would say. But
Yeah, on the grassroots, that's true. But we just have to keep in mind that, here I go off on the Democrats again. The Republicans don't attack their base the way the Democrats do because the Republicans are terrified of their base. If their base gets pissed off at them, they'll throw them out of office.
Right.
They've proven it again and again. Their base will vote for Trump whether they're told to or not. Mm-hmm. The Democrats have no such fear of their base. And anybody setting out to form an independent movement, let's take Bernie Sanders. But it's all the same. The Democrats dedicate millions of dollars to keeping those things off the ballot, to preventing word from getting out, from drowning their candidates in advertising. No, they'll still spend a lot of time and money and effort on that. Hmm. And that makes it really, really hard. No, I would love to see a meaningful third party in this country.
Well, so speaking of grassroots and kind of coming local, I would just there's going to be an event December 14th and 15th. re-examining some community values in this southern Humboldt area. Holly Carter and Rio Anderson are organizing this Southern Humboldt Values Conference. It's going to be at the Redwood Playhouse. And so this is kind of a reboot of a exercise that was done in 2017 where a bunch of people got together and hashed out what they believed the core values of our area were and came up with seven core values, which I don't have in front of me, but that, you know, it's you can imagine it's the basic good stuff. And so now that the community has changed dramatically fairly quickly, they want to reboot this and see if we're still resonating it with the same way. So it's going to be a, you know, an interactive process, 12:30, 4:30 each day. They kind of want people to commit to doing the whole process of listening and sharing and, you know, doing the usual thing, writing on the butcher paper and having breakout sessions and coming up with ideas. And I mean, this is the kind of thing that leads to some kind of political action at some level, you'd hope. Otherwise, it's just something else you put on the shelf.
And if you've done enough of these butcher paper, pink slip pinups, you may believe a little less that it's going to make a difference this time.
You may believe a little less that it's going to make a difference. Was that an endorsement or?
I was trying to float off the topic without making any major commitments.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, you know, it can be tedious to do that kind of thing. I recognize that. It's apparently it's not sponsored by any particular organization or anything. It's just sort of the goodwill of like, let's get together and where are we? You know, are we still the Medill Nation?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Good for them.
The analysis of, I don't know where it leads, but, it's certainly fodder for future, dare I say, grant making.
No, don't say it.
I mean, that's what comes to mind. Is it like make work to, I applaud the effort, but you know, is it just a mechanism to say, see, we're cool. I don't know. People should go and check it out, I guess.
But you know, talking about third parties, something I was really surprised by is when we look at the national voting numbers, Trump won by almost 2.5 million votes, but the third parties in contention got fewer votes than they have in decades. The Greens got little more than 0.5% of the vote. Bobby Kennedy then a little under. The Libertarians a little under that. So all the third party and independent and write-in votes in the country didn't amount to 2% of the electorate. At the same time, we know that the electorate is really disgusted with both the parties. But they're still kind of buying into this lesser evilism, greater evilism, vote against stuff.
Everybody knows they can't win, so they don't vote for it. Yeah, it's sort of sideways. You know, with that old thing of what if there was a war and nobody came? You know, of course people come because they force you to go. Right? You know, that's the way it is. And so, voting for a third party, they can win. Yeah, if everybody. Enough people vote for them, but of course you know they're not going to win, so you don't vote for them. And the people that do are left on the fringe often. But, you know, the Green Party's got a big problem. I was a Green Party advocate back in the day, and I live by the tenets of the Green Party, more or less, but they got to run for office that's not the president and win some elections, you know? It's rather a futile exercise in hubris to say, you know, every 4 years I'm going to run for president. That's all you ever hear about the Green Party. I mean, that's of course you're not getting any traction that way. And of course, running the same candidate over and over again, who's demonstrated a loser now. I mean, the only reason the Green Party got big traction was the big name of Ralph Nader.
24 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, That was the first issue of Green Fuse came out then. Huh. I wrote a thing about
I'll bet Ralph you Nader. Endorsed him too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I voted for Ralph Nader. I know. I wrote an article about his visit to Northern Mendocino County. You know. There he was talking it up to his people. And yeah, go Ralph.
No, but you're absolutely right. And the Republicans have demonstrated this. They bounced back to become a dominant party by building up from the base with school boards and supervisors and sheriffs and getting bigger and bigger and committing to it long term.
Like the Tea Party and now the MAGA Trumpsters. Yeah. Hey, we're getting the signal from the engineer. He's got some announcements, I believe, top of the hour. And do go to the Politically Correct Week in Review Facebook page. Check out the KMUD.org blog. And while you're there, go ahead and donate some money or become a member, preferably become a member. And keep tuned to the MUD because it's in your ear.
Glad to be here with you.
Yeah, and hopefully there's some more rain coming soon. We'll see.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.